Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle, the show, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn. We are sponsored by, and always sponsored by, Fiorello Barbell Company here in upstate New York. Our motto is, we don't try, we succeed. And today, this is a big honor for Motivation Muscle. John Wood has been a friend of the show. He owns U.S. Wellness Meats. I've done business with him for a number of years, and he realizes all the stuff in the background, pretty much what we've been dealing with here the last few years, and he's been a big supporter of me and the company. And I'm pleased to announce that John is with us today. So, John, welcome to the show.
Eric, honored to be on your program, and I applaud what you're doing. And, you know, food is medicine, and obviously you've figured out that how we eat, you know, affects how we perform in life.
That's for sure, John. And, you know, for those that don't know you and your company, who we want you to, we want our friends out there to get to know John and look at his website and see all the information he's got out there. Why don't you just give us a little background about yourself and how U.S. Wellness came about and where you are today?
Well, my story is somewhat interesting. I'm a fifth-generation farmer in northeast Missouri, and I came from a lineage of agrarians from Scotland to Ireland to Virginia, Georgia and Kentucky and Missouri. And you know, basically, if you look at my ancestors, they thrived on grass-fed meats. You know, they produced beef, they produce pork, they produce chicken, and my grandfather, who on my father's side, who lived to be almost 100 years of age, born in 1886, died in 1986. If you look at his lifestyle, I mean, he milked his own cow. He was probably 95 years of age, gathered his own eggs, and was a grass-fed cow 9 months out of the year. And so, you know, at the time, I didn't really appreciate what I was looking at. And I now, at this point in life, I look back and realized he was a paleo. He was paleo 100%. You know, had a large vegetable garden. And so, you know, food is, and I grew up with that. I mean, I grew up with a large garden, milked our own cow, produced our own beef. And I didn't get into bad food. I went off to college as a college freshman, and I went off and put on 10 or 15 pounds, and I had no idea what I was doing. But I look back now, and I went from a good diet to a bad diet. So, but anyway, this all started with U.S. Wellness Meat started in 2000. Four of us founded the company to produce and market and distribute grass-fed beef, and we were a long ways ahead of the curve. I'd read about the CLA, you know, discovery at the University of Wisconsin. Dr. Mike Pariza discovered that back in the 80s, doing some research on cancer and charbroiling beef over charcoal grills. And what they discovered in red meat was something in there that was impeding the growth of cancer cells, exactly the opposite of what they were looking for. And we were naive enough, I guess, in 2000 to think that we could actually market grass-fed beef based off of the health benefits. And nobody knew what CLA was. And we turned the website on November the 7th, 2000. That was a famous election, the Hanging Chad election in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
And we went to the end of the year. We had 45 orders, only two people we didn't know. And we, you know, and you got to think back in 2000, the internet was only 7 years of age. And I kind of had the belief that as a farmer, if I could connect directly with the end user or the consumer, you know, that was a better place to be than trying to sell meat into the commodity system. So that was kind of the dream I had. But we didn't realize how difficult this was going to be because nobody knew what grass-fed beef was back in those days. I remember going to an apple festival on the Mississippi River back in the fall of 2000, the fall of 2000. And there was a couple of, you know, nutritionists, certified nutritionists, and we mentioned CLA and grass-fed beef. They just looked at us like we were from the moon, you know. And, oh, my God, these are the educated people. They don't have a clue. And so we were just stubborn. You know, I'm a Scotch-Irish descendant, and I just too stubborn to give up. And we slowly, you know, gained a customer at a time. We never had a waterfall event where we all of a sudden the doors opened wide. We just slowly preached and about food as medicine, and slowly but surely we gained, you know, critical mass. But it's a little bit like your background as a strongman competitor. You know, you know, training comes in slow hitches. You know, you don't have huge breakthroughs, and you just struggle, and you know you're on the right path, and finally, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 years into the journey, you know, things got to be a bit easier. But by that time, you know, we had a number of media events, you know, Fast Food Nation, and a number of these things came out to kind of drive the consumer awareness. And then every recall, you know, you've got all these beef recalls, and people start asking questions about their food. And in the last 3 or 4 years, our problem's been trying to stay ahead of the demand curve. You know, we've had,
and that's a nice thing.
It's a good problem to have, but we've met fascinating people on the way, and slowly but surely we got out of the, you know, we went from strictly grass-fed beef. We got into grass-fed lamb and grass-fed bison and grass-fed butter and free-range chickens and, you know, heritage pigs, which are pigs you would see in this country in the 1950s and 60s, and pork that tastes like pork again. And so we just had a ball of fun. We've met lots of fascinating people.
Well, John, you know something? You made the comment you made, a couple, well, they're all good. Let me put it to you this way. But especially with the weightlifting, with your business, what I'm going through, and I tell this to people on any of our podcasts too, with whoever comes on, but you, like all these other guys that are on here that have gone through the same thing, the only thing I can tell people, I can tell you this, because we're right now, I feel we're at the point, we're ready to launch, and the podcasts are growing, and I can tell you this, stay steadfast in what you believe, and remember this, you chip away at things. The more you chip away, the sooner you're going to get to where you want to get. Now, John and I have gone back for many years, and John knows my situation with Iceland. I still haven't gone around that, you know, the goat pen. And with the last few years, with just some of the monetary things, I have not been able to go there. And, you know, we're working on right now with a group of gentlemen that we're looking at May of 2015, and I've already started training for it. To get any of these things, anything you want to get in your life, whatever's important to you, your niche, your goal, just like John said, you got to just keep going after it. And I can tell you that firsthand too. So I know things right now maybe are a little shaky out there and a little scary to some people, but this is what I would tell you, and we're going to get back to John, but this is the point. Don't be afraid. Don't let fear stop you from being a businessman or a businesswoman. If you got a dream, go for it. And you're talking to two guys right now that went for their dream. One, you can see that is super successful, and one that's on the cusp. I hope that will follow the same train that John took. So that's my piece, John. You can take it away. Oh, one thing I want to say, too, and you'll probably bring it up, but I always, you know, because I get your emails, obviously, because I'm on your list. Can you talk about the fresh food, that the meat that you can send? I believe, was that go out on a Monday or Tuesday? Because you always get reminders. I bet our listeners would really be interested in that.
We do fresh chilled once a month, and it's usually the last Friday, the 4th, was a deadline. It's usually the first Friday of the month, and you have to have your order in by the first Friday, and then we process that product on the following Monday, and then it ships out on Wednesday, and so you'll get the product on the following Thursday. But it's fresh chilled ground beef, chuck roast, ribeyes, tenderloins, and then we actually do a full strip loin. You can get a New York strip loin, and it's good stuff. You know, we have a limited following of fresh chilled, but you know, you're from the state of New York, and every time I was in Manhattan, every restaurant I ever walked into, you know, if it can't be fresh, it's just not going to come in the door. But But I talked to some pretty good biochemists, and they'll tell me there's not much difference, you know, between fresh and frozen, a few cell walls. Uh-huh. But anyway, but we do fresh. I think we're one of the only grass-fed meat companies in the United States that can do that or has done that. And it's, you know, timing is everything there. You have to have the orders in time, and sure, it's fabricated at a specific time of the week and shipped a specific time of the week, but we can do it.
I don't think people realize the behind-the-scenes stuff that you've got going on. You know, I don't think anybody does with a lot of things. I mean, all right, so they figure you raise the animal, you bring them to slaughter, you know, we just put everything together and ship it. But, you know, you're doing a lot of, you know, I won't say the word paperwork, but, and I know you have other people, I'm sure, helping you, but you've got a lot of big responsibilities going in the background. Why don't you address some of that to our clientele here, John?
Well, you know, the meat business has a lot of moving parts, and you know, I'm really jealous of the chicken industry. You can take a you can take an egg, and in 7 weeks you can have a fully grown chicken. And if you take an embryo out of a cow, you know, you're probably 30 months away. Now you're 30 to 39 months away from a finished grass-fed animal. It takes, you know, you've got it takes a long time in order to get that. Calf was born 9 months later, and then the animal is anywhere between 20 and 29 or 30 months of age when it reaches full-grown maturity. So it's a long, slow process. And then the fascinating thing about the meat business is that what you do after the harvest is critical to the quality of the end product. And we do a method called wet aging, which is perfected by a company called PM Beef, perfected this probably in the early 1980s, or a Minnesota-based company. And we use them for the first couple of years of our life, in our business life. And they were doing this up and down the East Coast in New Crops grocery stores. But wet aging is where you harvest the animal on Monday, and on Wednesday you break it into subprimal muscles. You'll have a strip loin, a ribeye, a tenderloin, an outside round, inside round, eye of the round, brisket flank, skirt, chuck roll, shoulder clod, and you know, those 18 or 19 primal muscles, and they go into a vacuum bag. They're sealed into a vacuum bag, and they go into cold storage at about 33 degrees, and they sit there very quietly and patiently for a minimum of 30 days, usually roughly 45 days. And then this muscle comes out of the bag. In the meantime, the enzymatic activity, meat is a living organism, and most people don't realize this, but it has to be below 28 degrees before meat will actually freeze. There's enough biological enzymatic activity that creates enough heat that you have to have it below 28 degrees in order to get meat to freeze. And I think liver's got to be below 26 degrees. Liver's the most active part of the entire animal. But in any event, after you let this product sit here for 30 to 45 days, the flavor profile becomes more uniform, and it becomes much more tender. My father's 91 years of age, and he buys flat iron steaks, and he buys bottom round and center cut shoulder roasts, and he cooks for himself. And he says those roasts are just for tender. You know, the guy 91 years of age doesn't have the teeth that you and I do. And so he's
God bless.
You know, so he, you know, he will he'll point out to me if things are right, and he just loves the product. So, in any event, I think we've you know, grass fed beef had kind of a bad rap, you know, in the early years of this thing, and there were some people who would harvest an animal on Monday and try to sell it, you know, as steaks or roast on Saturday night, and it's going to be tough. You know, if you go to Argentina, they will dry age those animals for a minimum of 21 days. And but if you look at some of the early cultures, you know, where we've aged beef, you know, the longer you can age a product, the better. And sure, that's what we've done.
John, I got so many things I'm thinking in my head. Just for the listeners, what type of cattle do you usually use, or do you use more than one?
Our primary focus is on English genetics. If you go back to England or Scotland, the Herefords, the Angus, the Shorthorns, those are the breeds. You know, those are the old lineage cattle breeds out of Scotland and Ireland, and that's where I think our best product comes from. The continental breeds out of Europe, you know, some of the Limousines And some of those breeds are more suited for a feedlot. But the you can add Charolais to it. You can add the Hereford, the Angus, Black Angus, Red Angus, Shorthorn. Devon is an old English breed. What you're after is a medium framed. What you're after is kind of basically, if you can look at it as football players, you don't want the wide receiver, you know, a real tall, lanky animal. You want you want that lineman that's, you know, that's got a big old barrel chest on him. And basically, you're looking for an animal with a large heart girth. And this is an interesting measurement. If you take a tape measure and put it behind the shoulders or the front legs of a steer, you're going to get, say 85 inches going around. And if you put the tape measure from the back of the head to the tip of the tail, most animals, you will have a longer top line measurement than you will around the heart girth. A very good grass-fed animal will have a larger heart girth and shorter top line. And that's a real simple measure of the potential for increased ribeye and strip loin area. Because the animal that's got the great big heart girth, big barrel chest, they're going to have a larger capacity to grass. They're going to have a larger capacity to grow better strip loin and a better ribeye muscle.
So, John, what would we be talking about now with an animal like that? What are we talking around weight range? What do they usually go at?
Well, we like to see an animal, you know, live weight about 1,250 pounds. Okay. And about 58% of that will be a hot carcass weight. And then by the time you bone that out in the boneless cuts, you know, you generate about you take the hot carcass weight times about 0.75, and you'll generate, that's what the retail meat yield is going to be on that animal. But and beef right now in this country has become we have the smallest cow herd in this country since 1951 or 52. We've had a lot of drought in the country. We've had some incredibly high grain prices in the last 5 years in the Midwest. And sadly, a lot of land in this country that should be in grass producing beef is now growing corn and soybeans.
That's correct.
Is aggravating some of our health issues. So,
and plus, not only that, you know, we keep hearing are how toxic cows are, the methane, how it's destroying the atmosphere, and you know, I don't buy any of it. Farmers in this country have just gotten hacked, in my opinion, and it's really been real bad the last 6 years here. And I hope down the road things are going to change, but I want to get to another topic, and I'm sure you're very familiar with it. Time magazine ran an article recently, and you're hearing all kinds of medical people that said fats basically are what's killing you. Well, we know it's the grains and the sugars and all that. And, you know, now butter's become good again. And, you know, I know you sell butter. I've purchased it from you before. Did you ever feel like you'd see this come full circle and suddenly now butter and fat isn't what's killing you and plugging your arteries and wiping you out? What was your take on that when you read anything like that?
Well, you got to give credit to several people. You got to give credit to Sally Fallon, the Weston A. Price. I mean, they've been preaching this story for about 15 years, and you know, Michael Pollan's come out and talked about it. You've got a number of people in the media world that are talking about this, and I think finally, you know, the great lie has finally been unmasked. And if you go back to the late 1960s, I'm fully convinced two or three of our major Fortune 500 food companies conspired, got together with the USDA, and if you'll read the 100-year lie by John Fitzgerald, you can read the story in there. But basically, they realized they can make a lot of money selling carbs and starches, and they got the USDA. They rearranged the food pyramid and to their advantage, and for the next 25 or 30 years, we managed to kill ourselves by down, literally, we have killed. A lot of people have died.
Definitely.
And it's a very, I'm a little cynical in my old age. I'm over 60 now, and I look back and I think it was an orchestrated ploy. They invested, you know, some of these same people invested in nursing homes and hospitals, and they knew they were going to have a lot of need for that, and they just made fortunes. So, you know, you've got to take ownership of what you do with yourself. And That's all the way from, you know, if you're having babies today, you know, the argument, yes. You know, pro or con on the immunization issues. And I tell my own children, never get measles, mumps, and rubella at the same time. And that's another sordid story. But I look back at my grandfather we discussed earlier in this podcast. And you know, lard and sourdough bread, they churned their butter. They all had a cow. And my father... I don't think there's very many Americans 91 years of age who have consumed as much butter as he did in his lifetime. As a kid growing up, he'd take a piece of bread and he would put a quarter inch of butter on that. He ate butter on everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he's 91 years of age. He's sharp as a tack. His mind, he's got his memory's better than mine. I mean, it's just incredible. Yeah. But he ate a tremendous amount of butter in his lifetime, and I got a picture in my brain. You know, the brain is an interesting organism. I attended a writing conference of all things in Texas. This was several months ago, and it talked about the Broca, which is part of the brain that you know is responsible for making an impression on people, and but when you see something like that butter on the cover of Time magazine, that was just a watershed moment. I just smiled when I saw that.
Yeah.
I mean, this was wow. But you know, and it took some courage for someone to do that because, you know, this went against the grain, so to speak.
Well, I think that too. And you know, the internet, like anything, when it's used properly, can really, you know, you've got to digest information and come up with your own ideas, but there still are some honest people out there. And I think now with the advent of obviously social media, you can go pro or con with that. But once again, you do have some people that research and are informative. And, you know, people are making decisions now that I don't think they would have a long time ago, whether you want to go pro or con with it. And one thing I can tell you, especially from being from an Italian family, you know, olive oil was always big. And, you know, I don't eat a lot of macaroni anymore, obviously, because I don't want the insulin bump, number one. And I don't need it. But if I do, you know, I have no trouble even putting butter on hot tomato sauce or olive oil all over it. And a lot, you know, I've read things and a lot more people are exercising that way too. But here's the biggest thing we had talked before we came on this podcast. Obviously, I do train people and we're right now kind of knee deep with the weight loss here at my at Fiorella Barbell. I did exactly what a lot of people have done. When we had Dennis, he's going to be, we got a new DVD MP4 coming out very shortly. We're in the process now of getting the launch ready to go. And Dennis was 43 at least pounds overweight, had a very big stomach on him. He has a history in his family of diabetes, heart disease, to the point where his grandfather had to have toes taken off. So he just turned 40 and he was pretty scared. And he was not in good shape. He had trained here for a while. He'd gone to Iceland with me, but he let himself really get out of shape. So we started in July 4th of 2013, and he weighed 267. And on November 6th of that same year, I knocked him down to 224. We had a goal of 225. Right now he's holding at 222, and we're doing some things now to bolster some size on him for Christmas, so we're going to have something out then too. But the thing was, John, what we did is we went on pretty much a grass-fed diet. We eliminated the grains, especially the sugars and the starches. He was a big sugar guy, and it was to the point where this is what I didn't know about him. This is a guy I talked to a lot. He was suffering from depression, very bad. And it shocked me when he told me, because I didn't find this out till we were filming one segment of this MP4. And what I want you to tell me is this. In your experiences with your customers who have had weight loss, do you feel, well, we know what it's going to do. If they came to you and talked to you, or they didn't know where to go at this point, and I'm sure you've met many of them along the way, was it a hard sell at first with the grass-fed style diet, you know, where maybe we go to low glycemic berries and grass-fed beef, chicken, et cetera, and greens. Have you come across a lot of resistance at first to this? And then what would happen with somebody that you finally got to try it and they convinced themselves, holy cow, look at me. So have you experienced a ton of this, put it that way?
Well, my experiences are slightly different. The three things that come to mind, number one, there is an artist in Puerto Rico who's a current customer, and several years ago, he went 100% grass-fed, and he lost 100 pounds in about a year. Oh. And another gentleman from northeastern Wyoming, I think Gillette, Wyoming, he was he was buying meat from us, and he called me one afternoon. I was talking to him. He says, "Well, you never believe my story." And he told me that he had, you know, gotten into the paleo thing and cut out the sugar and the flours and the breads, and he also had dropped 100 pounds. And my friend in Puerto Rico actually wrote, we actually published a letter from him in the newsletter. This was 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. If you go back and scan through our archive, you could probably find him. But anyway, he was an artist, and he was a really passionate artist. And he said, I would just eat terrible foods. I'd eat pizzas, and he finally took upon himself to straighten out his eating habits. And it was amazing how much weight he lost and how quickly he lost it. And the other thing that I run into is we were voted the Paleo Purveyor of the Year for the last 2 years in a row. And a lot of people that are into this grass-fed beef thing are either CrossFit or Paleo or some form of that. Yeah. And, you know, it's just amazing how many people you talk to that made the Paleo switch. And 30 days, they see a difference. I mean, it happens rather quickly. And usually you've got to be motivated, driven by, like your friend who had, you know, a history of diabetes and heart disease in the family. You know, at some point, you know, push comes to shove, and yeah, I got to do something about this. I can't go down the path. But the one thing that I have heard numerous times from numerous medical people, your family history does not have to be your death sentence. You can change the outcome, and you can change the outcome by how you eat and how you train. And the depression thing is kind of intriguing. People that are active. I belong to a CEO group in St. Louis called Vistage, and there's a Vistage group, I'm sure, near you and sure. In Syracuse. And I've actually been going to meetings for 5 years. I didn't think I'd last more than two meetings. And every time I go, I pick up a nugget. But we had a gentleman speak to us a couple of months ago. He's 65. He had, I guess you called it, Thrips syndrome. This is where you have, you know, you see people have got a twitch, you know, every 5 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
But he had an extreme case of it when he was a child. He got kicked out of first grade because he would take two steps and do a 360 spin, two steps, 360. And sadly, you know, this was 50 some odd years ago. They thought he did it on purpose. So they kicked him out of school. And the parents were good parents. They took him around Canada trying to find a doctor. Nobody could really figure it out. And they put him in a mental institution for 4 months to study him. And this is a great story. You'll love the outcome of this one. So 4 months goes by, and the mom and dad show up to the PhD psychiatrist. And they told the little boy, you've got to stay out in the hallway. You can't come in to hear what he's going to say. And, you know, they reluctantly went in the room with the PhD psychiatrist, and after a few minutes, he said, "Well, I hate to tell you this, but your son is retarded." With that, the dad reached over, grabbed the psychiatrist by the necktie, and got two pretty good right hands in on the guy.
Good.
The mom jumped on the dad so he wouldn't inflict any more damage. And then about a 200-pound secretary came barreling down the hall. She'd heard the commotion, and she knocked the door down. Of course, the poor kid sees this, all these arms and legs, and he said, "Son, you're going with me." He said, "The only one that's retarded in this building is this guy right here." You
know? Good for him. Thank God.
But the rest of the story was, at the age of 23, he graduated from the University of Toronto as an oral surgeon with a master's degree. You know, the guy, he was no dummy after all. And he did advanced oral surgery for 12 years. Then he got intrigued with psychology. Of course, he was depressed. as a child, and he got a PhD in clinical psychology, and specifically with people under special disorders. And the thing that he discovered that works for anybody alive today is exercise. And in fact, I bought the heart monitor. I've got it sitting here on my desk, and I haven't taken time to really perfect the thing yet. But basically, you should get your heart rate up to a working heart rate, a minimum of 3 days a week, preferably five. And it depends upon your age, your level of fitness. So obviously, the shape you're in, you would have a really high heart rate. But anyway, he said by doing that, you eliminate mental illness. You will improve your health dramatically. And he said, I take no drugs today. I take nothing. And I eat grass-fed beef. You know, he was a really fascinating guy. And he was a proponent of clean meats, grass-fed meats. You got to clean up your diet. And then vigorous exercise 3 to 5 days a week, and you will reduce your odds of Alzheimer's, dementia, all those things go down dramatically. But the trick is to, and he said, as you get in better shape, he said, you need to up your, there's a whole science behind this. And
sure, and
I think that's something you ought to kind of explore, because you, in fact, off the air, I'll send you this guy's link. It's a,
okay,
a fascinating deal. But
well, John, I'll tell you what. Fitness, my brother was over here a few weeks ago, and I've told everybody this, that, you know, podcast-wise, and I know you will appreciate this. You know, we love talking about all the old strength athletes, and, you know the stuff I'm in with Stones, and I'm even doing more dangerous stuff now, and, you know, I get beat up a lot, you know, the knees, a lot of times it's not even related to lifting. You know, I slid down, I put new wall-to-wall in the house, and I hit the edge of the stairs about 3 weeks ago, and I'm lucky I didn't blow my knee off me. I pinned myself right under my, like, bent my knee back, and 303 came down on it, so it's been pretty sore. I've done everything I can. Well, like yesterday, I ordered the Cal Mag because, you know, I want to have that and all that. It's a lot better, and hopefully, you know, I went down and had it looked at. There weren't any tears, but, you know, that doesn't feel good. But to make a long story short, Mark and I were talking, and when he was like, what the hell are we ever going to do if we can't lift anymore for some reason? I said, well, hopefully if I go right on the platform. But I was like, I'm going to tell you something right now. We all do things. Some things aren't always the best. Some are. But if there's one thing I've done right in my life, the best thing I ever got into was physical culture. I'm telling you, I've been doing it since I was 10 years old. I've been doing it for almost 30 years now. I don't regret one day of it. And there will be days you just feel like you're beaten right into the ground, you know, with what you're doing. When I go out there, because, you know, yesterday we talked about the garage gym. I couldn't be in a better place mentally, physically, spiritually. I've told people I'll have one of these workouts where it's almost like you feel like you step out of your body. It's so intense and so heavy. And then when you're done, you know, I'll be sitting out there all with my stones, like, surrounding me, like my whole military Roman camp there. And it's in the sky. I'll be just tranquil and blue and black and whatever it is, just before it gets real dark out. I can't tell you a more peaceful, creative time I'll have in my head, just my thoughts. And it's really good sometimes to become peaceful, because I know myself, I'm very aggressive as a human being. And, you know, sometimes you got to give yourself a break, you know, and it's a tranquility that I have never matched yet. And that sounds probably very simple to people, but you got to learn to be alone with yourself and get to know yourself. You don't always need to have all that noise and, you know, and be around a million people. You should learn to get to know yourself and listen to yourself. But I know we're off track a little bit again, but I got to tell people, physical culture, if anything, is the best thing you could ever do in your life. And I wish more people would buy into it and try it, because I'm telling you, it's not as hard as you think it is. Maybe it's been hard because you've gone to the wrong people. But, you know, search people out, you know, and we got the food here and all that. I don't want to hold you up too much longer, John, because I know that you're probably pressed for time. But there's a couple things I just want to hit upon, and you can go any way you want with them. First off, obviously, you know, fats are definitely the thing, and, you know, when you're talking about Alzheimer's and everything with fitness, and we know how much fat really the brain is compromised mostly of fat. And then the second question is, what I want to ask you here, if you had to name, obviously, your best fat, I would assume you'd probably say the grass-fed beef. But if you had to name, like, a top three, I know we've talked about lard and all that. You know, give me, like, your top three of what you would consume for good fats. And then secondly, you know, I'd like to have you on the show again, and I'd like to really dive in this with you. For the athletes out there, because I know that you've had athletes on your site that, you know, endorse your product. Just shortly, what do you feel? All right, let's look at a guy like me, 300-pound guy. We're lifting stones. Everything's brutality that I'm doing. Obviously, endurance for me is taking like a 6x6 on my shoulder of treated wood that's I can't tell you how many feet long, and then carrying, like, say, a 9-pound sledgehammer 95 feet up and down a driveway. That's kind of like my endurance work. So what would you say for a guy, if I had to ask you, all right, John, just give me a couple things for that, and then, you know, we'll hit upon this, I hope, at another time. Those two questions, let's start out with your three favorite fats, you would say, that would really influence the body as a whole, obviously, with the brain. What would you go with there?
Well, the first two fats, I'd say, would be pemmican for breakfast and pemmican for lunch. I'm sitting here munching on some pemmican while we've had the interview today. The pemmican is what the Cherokees, Indians, I use their recipe. It's about 45% tallow or pure beef fat and about 55% jerky, high protein, high fat. And I start today every morning with two pemmican bars. So I've got a good load of fat going and a good load of protein going right off the get go. And then you know, from a fat content, I think, butter's a great choice. You know, with butters, you've got some great fats in butter. And I know a lot of friends that are really, you know, take a lot of coconut oil or coconut ghee.
Yep.
I mean, those are fats that you can, in fact, if you want to keep Alzheimer's at bay, a tablespoon of coconut oil a day, like an apple a day, keep the doctor away. So, you know, the main thing is it's all saturated fats are not bad. You know, we need to have some good saturated fats. And I think that's almost a treasonable offense, you know, what was done back in the late 60s, early 70s when we told people that fats were bad. I mean, we just tortured some people. And I know several people that were afraid to eat anything that was fat-related, and people believe that. And 1973 was the peak consumption of beef in this country. I think per capita it was like 92 pounds per capita. And I think this year it's going to be 52 pounds. We've decreased beef consumption by 40 pounds per capita in the last 41 years. And if you looked at that beef consumption drop, and you know you got a bar graph up there, and then you throw on the Alzheimer's dementia epidemic, as one went down, one went up. I mean, it's just graphic. I mean, gee, people, why did it take us 30 years to figure this out?
Yeah, you hit it long ago in the podcast that there were parties involved that were definitely working this for a reason, whether it was for profit, and obviously the institutions that should be telling us what's going on were most likely paid off. And, you know, look what that did to it. That could have done, you know, a generation of people right there easily. And, you know, there's a lot of other things too, like when you're talking about with the corn fields and the soy fields. I mean, this could be another thing we could talk about down the road. Look what soy's done to boys. I mean, I've read things from the 70s that development wasn't even there. I mean, they have a lot of feminine traits. I can't believe anybody couldn't see that happening, or, you know, that bothers me big time. But we are living in a feminized society right now, I believe, too. And from what I've seen, especially with girls dating and all that, I don't buy all that, because most of the girls that I've gone out with really enjoy a man. And I mean, you can be a man and strong and still be a gentleman. You don't have to be crass and vulgar, you know, but you can still have your manhood intact. And that's what I think we're lacking right now in a lot of places. And I think a lot of women are looking for that. But now, you know, the fats are right on the money. The butter, the coconut oil. I like cod liver oil. You turned me on to that. They're all good things. And with the grass-fed diet is, like, out of this world. As far as, like, with lifting goes, if I called you up and you didn't know me, I said, Mr. Wood, I'm so-and-so, and I'm doing this very extensive training, or I'm getting ready to go over to Iceland and lift the Husafell stone. And, you know, you don't know me from anybody, but I know you have years of experience and I've read things on your site. What would you tell me as a first-time buyer from you? What would you tell me to do?
Well, number one, I'd tell you that, you know, I'd start out today based on some strong men that we work with. You know, I'd start out today with a high-fat, high-protein breakfast, and then I'd end the day on something like a sirloin steak or a flank steak, something that's lean and high-protein, and let that last meal of the day be kind of the healer as you're putting in your 6 or 7 hours of sleep overnight. And I'd also tell you, from a cost standpoint, you don't have to go eat tenderloin fillets. I would tell you that a flat iron steak is probably one of the best values on the website. Flat iron is going to have, it comes out of the blade muscle, the shoulder. It's not used for walking, so it's tender. That flat iron can be a very tender steak, and it's got a pretty high fat content in it, so you're getting good fats. I'd also tell you that, and basically, I have, you know, I could eat anything out of the website, and I prefer a 75% lean hamburger patty for supper. People think I'm crazy. I eat lots of, and nothing better than a good burger, you know.
Oh, yeah.
75% lean burger, and from a cost standpoint, I eat lots of hamburger. And yeah. And even hot dogs. Our hot dog are 70%. I mean, our fattiest ground beef is 75% lean. Hot dogs are 70% lean, so hot dogs...
Wow.
You can get more fat out of the hot dog, which is 30% fat, and then the mother of all the fats. Well, there's two more levels up. One is the pemmican bar, which is 45% mm-hmm. fat, and then if you really want to go, you know, full circle, buy the marrow bones, buy the thin marrow bones. Bone marrow is like 88% fat. And yep. That is why when a wolf kills a wild animal, the first thing they do is crack those bones, or after that, bone marrow. They, you know, wild animals, the wild dogs know that the bone marrow is the most powerful part of the most powerful nutrient. And then if you're going to get back to wild animals and harvesting, and you go back to Cherokee Indians, when the Indians killed a deer, the first thing they ate out of the body cavity was the liver.
Liver.
And the, yep. They ate it raw, and lead guy on the hunting party got the first taste of liver. They would eat those organs raw. They knew they didn't have any shelf life. They'd eat the liver, they'd eat the heart, they'd eat the pancreas glands. They knew those glands had magical enzymes, and my friend, my doctor friend, I know several people, you know, that are Native American heritage, and that's why you go back to Weston Price again. He traveled the world, and the best teeth he found on the planet were the Aborigines in Australia. They didn't own a toothbrush, but they had less than 0.5% of them had a cavity, and they had the highest per capita consumption of organ meats of anybody on the planet. The second best teeth were the high Alp pastures in Switzerland, where they ate the, you know, they ate the cream and the butter coming off the cows that were drinking the glacial water coming off the mountain streams, and they had some unusual powerful properties there. I think there were 2% cavities in that population. As soon as they went off to Zurich or a major city and ate the garbage food,
yeah.
They had cavities like everybody else. But But I would tell you, if you really want to be the strongest man in the world, I'd eat plenty of grass fed beef, and I'd eat those good organ meats as well, and the marrow and gun down, you know, beef liver, and you know, I think that's what the warriors, you know, if you go back in the Native American culture in this country, you know, the strongest warriors, those were the leaders, and guess what? When they harvested a wild game, they were the first one to get the shot at the liver and some of those organ meats. So it's
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but the hot dogs, in case, I just want to clarify it. Those are the beef hot dogs for the people.
Yeah, it's 100% beef hot dogs. We have a sugar-free with a, you know, a touch of salt and pepper and garlic, and then we have a garlic frank, which has got added garlic, not much more added garlic, and then we have a plain frank, and that's just got a touch of turbinado sugar. Turbinado sugar is the first extract off the sugar cane plant, and it's a real small amount. It's not much in there.
Yeah.
It's a little more of a sweeter hot dog, but.
And I mean that sugar, I don't know if that was the exact name, but the Indians, Native Americans, they used to chew sugar like that, right?
Well, they would chew sugar cane, correct? Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, right there is a big list that a weightlifter could get right on. You know, you nail in a flat iron steak, some beef hot dogs, some pemmican, some marrow bones. You know, you got ground beef. You know, I know in the past that you and I, we've talked about fat with that. Maybe you could tell them what, I don't remember what I put in it. Remember, I always wanted to fatten the meat up more. What if somebody wanted to do that, say, I mean, without being ridiculous, what can you, was it tallow we mixed?
No,
that?
you would actually buy beef soot. We sell beef soot in a 5-pound bag. And so if you want to add additional fat to your ground beef and make a 60% lean burger,
yep,
that's what you would do.
Yeah, well, I figured that's always good because the guys that I travel with, that's all they talk about is we want more fat, we want more fat. Because what I've run up against here, if I've got to buy burger, like we just have a Whole Foods just opened here. Now, I'm very mixed about that place because of some of the practices. But, you know, we got a co-op here, too, that's just they built a brand new place. But, you know, one thing people want to make aware of, and I'm sure John can attest to this, I ask every place I go now with meat if they know of any soy. Were the cattle fed, any type of soy diet, blah, blah, blah. Well, it was good because the other day we got some grass-fed beef. I wanted to try a hamburger from there. And they had three different types. And I said to the guy, Do any of this red meat here have soy in it? Because I always tell them I'm allergic to it. I won't eat it anyways. I'd rather not eat if that was the case. Well, by God, I think it was either one or two of them had it. Because I made the guy go back and get the manager, and I could tell he was pissy about it. I was like, too bad, man. I said, I'm not going to put anything, you know, unless I'm going to order something from you, I know the stuff is fine, but I will not do business with anybody when it comes to that without asking them that. And if they volunteer it usually easily, you know, I got no problem with it. But when it's kind of like, well, I don't know, you know what I do? I turn around and leave. So that's a concern, I'm sure, of my listeners. And I'm sure we don't have any problem with your stuff with soy. But I think that's a thing you got to, you know, I think that's a question people should ask with anybody with meat, don't you?
Well, sure, you have to. You know, you know your meat, know your farmer, and so. And I've seen several people. You know, I've had people call me from places. You know, several well-known grocery store chains, and they would say, "I'm looking at blah 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 product label, and is this grass-fed?" I don't know why they call U.S. Wellness Meats for inside store help, but it happens occasionally. And I'd said,
you're good, that's why.
Yeah, you know, and I'd say, well, you know, best get management, but I don't think it is. And, you know, and a lot of times you had the word natural on the package label, and you show a picture of a cow eating grass, and people thought it was grass-fed beef. And, you know, grass-fed beef. It was just a clever marketing. But
yeah. Well, look, I know you've got things to do, and I've had you on for a while, but I got to tell you, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on, John, and the invitation to come on the show is open to any time you'd like to. I would love to have you on as much as you'd like to come on. We're doing a thing here where we're building a network of people. We want this podcast to be, well, right now it is all over the world because we're on iTunes and Stitcher. We'd like to help you out, get you some more customers, and on the flip side, we want to be number one in the world. And I don't say that lightly when I say that to you. So before we sign off here, I'd like you to tell everybody here on Motivation Muscle your website address. And, you know, if you got Twitter, we know Facebook. Anything that is pertinent to people coming and visiting you, I'd love for you to, you know, give our audience what you got.
Eric, first of all, I'm honored to be on the program, and I wish you the most success. And you're a fighter, a competitor, and impressed with your interview here today. And you can send your listeners to US Wellness Meats. It's plural, US Wellness, MEATS.com. And we have Twitter, we have Facebook, we've got a great blog, and all those links are on the website. So I'd suggest they just punch in the website. And for those on the first time buyers on the website, you can use the promo code KITCHEN101, Kitchen, KITCHEN 101. That'll give you a 15% discount for orders under 40 pounds. So over 40 pounds, you don't have the discount opportunity, but under 40 pounds, you can use KITCHEN101 promo code and for the rest of the year. So again, uswellnessmeats.com. And we can be reached at 877-383-0051. Again, 877-383-0051. And Eric, thank you very much.
You're welcome. And John, I will talk to you off the show for a second if you don't mind.
Okay.
But I want to obviously thank John Wood from US Wellness Meats. And I will tell you this, if you do call that number, he'll call you back. And that's one thing about John. This is why we're doing this podcast, Motivation Muscle. We want people like John around us. We want our customers to be his customers, and I hope maybe some of his customers will become mine down the road too. This man's very authentic, and if you've heard me talking in the last 2 weeks, I've been banging the drum on it. And this is what we want on Motivation Muscle. So I'll tell you where we are. We are www.FiorelloBarbellCo.com. That's co.com. This is Motivation Muscle, the show that connects your brain to your brawn. We are on Stitcher and iTunes. So like I said to John before, we are heard all over the world right now. This podcast will obviously be up on the website either late afternoon or tomorrow morning. Let me think so I don't forget anything else here. You can get a hold of me at FiorelloBarbell@NICAP.RR.com. The phone number, everything to get a hold of me is on there. If you need any assistance with anything, don't hesitate to call. I will be back to you within 24 hours. And before we leave here, we've talked on the other podcasts. We are looking for people. You know, we want you to tell us what you think about us. You know, I'm on Twitter at Fiorello Eric. That's FIORILLOERIC. You know, send us something. If you got questions and you can't get a hold of John, John is fine with it, I'll forward them to him, or I'll ask him, and when he has time available, he can help us out with that. And I think that's pretty much it. But we are looking for people that really want to make a difference. And, you know, if you fit the bill, whether it's training, nutrition, ways that you found that work better than ways other people have stated how to do things, you know, drop us a line. We're all about that. So I want to thank John Wood today. I can't thank you enough. And I want to just sign off and tell everybody, have a great day, great week, and you'll be hearing from us again.
You're listening to Motivation and Muscle, the best podcast connecting your brain to your brawn.